This video is for educational and infotainment purposes only. It is not intended to encourage or glorify the use of illegal drugs, violence, or criminal activity in any way. Known as La Madrina, the Godmother, Colombian drug lord Griselda Blanco entered the cocaine trade in the early 1970s when a young Pablo Escobar was still boosting cars to get by. While Escobar would go on to become the biggest kingpin of the 1980s, Blanco was the biggest queenpin, who at her peak was reportedly smuggling cocaine into the United States worth over $80 million a month. But what set Griselda Blanco apart as a major trafficker was her absolute ruthlessness. During her reign of terror, she made countless enemies throughout Colombia and the United States, and she would do anything to eliminate them. From shopping mall shootings to drive-by motorcycle hit squads to home invasions, Griselda Blanco became one of the deadliest cocaine traffickers in the world, believed to be responsible for ordering at least 250 murders and potentially upwards of 2,000. So how did this little girl who grew up with nothing on the poverty-stricken streets of Colombia amass an empire in the billions of dollars? Well, you're about to find out. I'm Joshua Roberts, attorney at law, and you are watching Lawyer Up. In today's episode, we're going to take a look at the life and times of Griselda Blanco. We're going to start with her life on the streets of Cartagena and Medellin in Colombia. We're going to look at her first murder, which she committed as a child. We're going to talk about her introduction to the cocaine trade and trafficking in New York and then ultimately in Miami. And of course, we're going to talk about the trail of dead husbands that she left along the way, earning her the nickname Black Widow. We will look at her legal battles, her time in prison, and lastly, what finally did her in. All in today's episode. If you enjoy the episode, hit that like button for me. If you've got something to say, you got a question, put it in the comment sections below. And if you haven't subscribed, what are you waiting for? Smash that subscribe button now. Griselda Blanco Restrepo was born on February 15th, 1943 in Cartagena, Colombia, on the country's north coast. Blanco lived with her mother, Ana, in an impoverished shanty town outside of the city. These ghetto areas were choked with ramshackle huts with tin roofs, and murder was so rampant that the kids would amuse themselves by digging holes in the ground to bury bodies that littered the city's filthy streets. Hoping for a better life, she and her mother would move south to Medellin. Still totally poverty-stricken, Mother Ana basically resorted to a life of petty crime, engaging in prostitution, theft, and drugs, as the family teetered on the brink of homelessness for most of Blanco's early childhood. So, needless to say, Griselda had to grow up fast on the streets of Medellin. She too would work as a pickpocket until, shockingly, she would up the criminal game significantly. At age 11, Blanco and a ragtag group of children reportedly descended from the hills surrounding Medellin to the well-to-do flatlands, where they kidnapped a 10-year-old boy from a wealthy Colombian family. Secreting the boy back to their hillside slums, Blanco and her cohorts held him hostage as they attempted to shake down his family. Unfortunately for the boy, his family was not forthcoming, so the group of children handed Blanco a gun, daring her to shoot the hostage between the eyes. And perhaps living in an environment that was so rife with violence that the 11-year-old Blanco was desensitized to the idea of bloodshed, or perhaps it was simply her nature. Either way, Blanco put the gun to the young boy's head and pulled the trigger. It would be the first in a long, long line of her victims. From there, she would leave Ana's company after repeated assaults by her mother's boyfriends. Blanco survived by picking pockets and selling her body for cash on the streets of Medellin. That was until she met Zulma Andino Trujillo. Trujillo was a street hustler who specialized in creating false immigration documents and smuggling illegal aliens into the United States. Blanco was smitten by Trujillo's criminal savvy, and it was her first taste of organized crime. They soon married and would have three children. But by the time the late 60s rolled around, Blanco would divorce Trujillo and then have him killed over a business dispute. It was a theme that would reverberate throughout Blanco's life. Soon after, she met and then married yet another hustler, Alberto Bravo. Instead of illegal immigrants, Bravo moved cocaine. And by the early 1970s, he had a bankroll of $26,000, which of course would be dwarfed by Blanco in the future, but at the time that was an impressive sum in Medellin. Wanting to expand their fortunes in the cocaine business, the business model for success was very, very clear. Get your cocaine to the United States, where it often sold for 10 times as much as it did in Colombia. So Bravo and Blanco, like so many others, decided to pursue the American dream. And it's the early 70s, and Bravo and Blanco illegally immigrate to New York. They settle down in Queens, where they established a cocaine business that quickly took off as the Big Apple began its decades-long love affair with the drug. In a city where narcotics were controlled by the deep-rooted five families of the mafia, it would seem a long shot that a pair of Colombians could make a dent in the market. But with a direct connection to an almost unlimited source of cocaine from what became known as the Medellin drug cartel, a huge dent they would make. Now, logistics has always been an issue in getting the cocaine into the United States. In fact, they have made movies about Medellin drug smugglers Carlos Letter, George Jung, and Barry Seal, all of which have their own feature videos on this channel if you are interested. But that was before this time. So during that time, Blanco had to get creative. What Blanco did to get cocaine into New York was have young female couriers hide small amounts in their suitcases, on their bodies, or they would have coke hidden in their bras, their underwear, and even their shoes, which Blanco had specially designed for that purpose. In fact, and even though it had technically been done before, Blanco is often credited as the mastermind who invented the modern-day body carry smuggling method. And they were wildly successful. By the mid-70s, Griselda Blanco and her husband had made about $500 million in cash. And so at that point, Blanco simply bought her own planes and had her own pilots flying in the drugs directly from Colombia. And this was also about the time that Pablo Escobar was first emerging on the drug scene. With business booming, husband Bravo would return to Colombia to restructure the export end. Meanwhile, Blanco stayed in New York and continued to expand the empire. But with her increase in popularity, a client roster that included movie stars and major athletes, and increasing ire of the New York mob, Blanco's burgeoning organization drew law enforcement scrutiny. A joint NYPD and DEA investigation dubbed Operation Banshee resulted in the indictment of Blanco and more than 30 of her subordinates on federal drug conspiracy charges. This occurred in April of 1975. And at that time, it was the biggest cocaine case in U.S. history. Yet when the feds went to arrest her, she had vanished. Quote, "We had her on drug conspiracy charges," remembers Bob Palombo, who was a central player in Operation Banshee, "but she was nowhere to be found," end quote. Unbeknownst to the feds, Blanco had slipped out of the country and gone back to Colombia just before the indictment was handed down. Now, she had returned for a couple of reasons. Number one, of course, was to avoid arrest under the New York indictment. But she also had an issue with her husband and business partner, Alberto Bravo. And really, this is where the legend of Griselda Blanco was etched in history forever. Our first shout out today is to our presenting sponsor, Skillshare, the online learning community with instructional videos from industry leaders on just about any topic you can imagine. These are how-to videos focusing on completing a specific project rather than just general information. It's practical learning on topics of your choice and at your pace. Skillshare, check out the link in the description below. It was a warm spring day in 1975 when Blanco's Learjet touched down at the Bogota airport after a 2.5 hour flight from Miami. A convoy of long black limousines manned by a crew of enforcers met the plane on the tarmac and whisked the 32-year-old away, headed to a meeting. Blanco, back in her native country, was scheduled to meet her husband and business partner, Alberto Bravo. Standing barely 5 feet tall and weighing 165 pounds, with a wide oval face and a cleft chin, her growing reputation with street dealers and law enforcement had earned her the nickname La Madrina, meaning the godmother. She'd returned to Colombia because she was unsatisfied with Bravo's stewardship of their vast empire. Millions in profits had gone missing, and Blanco blamed her husband. So when she and her enforcers pulled into the parking lot of a nightclub outside Bogota, she tucked a pistol into her ostrich skin boot and stepped out of her limo. Blanco strode toward Bravo, who was waiting for her across the lot, backed by his own team of goons. Sensing his wife's rage, Bravo lashed out, accusing her of letting the godmother talk go to her head. And according to the legend, a furious Blanco drew out her pistol and fired several shots point blank at her husband. He responded by pulling an Uzi out of his waistband and returning fire. In the melee, 6 bodyguards were killed. Blanco would be struck in the stomach, but she would ultimately recover from her wounds. Her husband, shot in the face, was not so lucky. And it was in that moment, Blanco had eliminated not only her spouse, but also one of the most feared players in the Colombian cocaine business. It was a major step in Blanco's improbable rise from an impoverished street urchin to perhaps the wealthiest self-made woman in the world. And it was on that day in the dusty Bogota parking lot that she earned another fearsome nickname, the Black Widow. Upon the death of her second husband, Griselda Blanco was now in sole control of her drug empire, and she kept the cocaine flowing into the United States. In 1976, Blanco most famously smuggled cocaine aboard a ship known as Gloria, which the Colombian government had sent to America as part of a bicentennial race in the New York Harbor. In 1978, she would marry husband number 3, a bank robber named Dario Sepulveda. And that same year, her 4th son, Michael Corleone, was born. And if that name sounds familiar, it should. Having apparently taken the godmother mantle to heart, she named her boy after Al Pacino's character from The Godfather. So by now, it's the late 70s, and the Medellin drug cartel is in full swing, led by the Ochoa family, Pablo Escobar, and Gustavo Gaviria. Supply was limitless, and demand, well, that was still bigger than ever in the United States. With warrants and mafia opposition in New York, she then set her sights on a new location in the United States, Miami, where she would earn another title, the Queen of Cocaine. Now, the timing of her arrival in Miami was interesting. Up to this point, the local cocaine trade was controlled by a network of Cuban refugees and a few renegade American players. Miami had become a gateway to the Latin American criminal underworld, and it was a violent universe that would be glorified in movies like Scarface. So you'd think that Blanco, being the new kid in town, would try to quietly carve out a little niche. Nope. Blanco was not satisfied to simply share in the profits of the drug game. She wanted to dominate it. So in the late 70s, along with a group of thugs led by her enforcer, Jorge Rivi Ayala, she embarked on a killing spree of rival dealers designed to eliminate the competition. And as rivals went down, Blanco's territories expanded and she got even richer still. In Miami, she lived lavishly. Homes, expensive cars, a private jet, she had it all. She hosted wild parties frequented by all the major players in the drug world. And according to some sources, she even forced men and women to have sex with her at gunpoint. Blanco also became addicted to smoking large amounts of unrefined cocaine called bazooka. And this likely contributed to what many described as her increasing paranoia. And even though the Black Widow was from Medellin, it was sometime during this time period where she and Pablo Escobar got crossways, going from friends to foes. And this could have been from the increasing competition among the various factions, including the Medellin cartel itself, which was also flying in plane loads of cocaine through Carlos Letter and George Jung at that time. Regardless, conflict erupted, and from 1979 to 1984, South Florida basically turned into a war zone. The Miami Drug Wars, or the quote, cocaine cowboy era, as it was later dubbed, really began on July 11th of 1979. Several of Blanco's hitmen had pulled up to the Crown Liquor Store in the Dadeland Shopping Mall in southern Miami. They had arrived in a delivery van with the words Happy Time Complete Party Supply emblazoned on the side. They would hop out, assassinate a rival drug dealer, and then chase liquor store employees throughout the mall with their guns ablazing. It was quite a scene. The problem was that by the time they started heading back to the van, the police had already arrived and seized it. And while losing a van normally would not have been a big deal, this was no ordinary van. Police would call it a war wagon, because its sides were covered by quarter-inch steel and it had gun ports cut into them. Quite a high-dollar rig. Well, with the war wagon ending up in the hands of police, Blanco would turn to a more efficient getaway vehicle for her hitmen, motorcycles. And quite often, they ended up using motorbikes during assassinations, a technique that was brought to the U.S., pioneered on the streets of Medellin. So, for some perspective, by the early 1980s, 70% of America's cocaine and marijuana was coming in through Miami. And because of that, the bodies were starting to pile up throughout the city. In the first 5 months of 1980, Miami saw 75 murders. In the last 7 months, there were 175. And by 1981, Miami was not only the murder capital of the U.S., but the entire world. And Blanco? She was right in the middle of it. Blanco struck fear in the hearts of countless people, including fellow drug lords, because while other criminals killed with a purpose, Blanco killed first and asked questions later. Blanco's most trusted hitman, Rivi, would later recount that when Blanco ordered a hit, it meant that everyone in the vicinity was to be killed. Innocent bystanders, women, children, Blanco did not care. La Madrina was merciless. If you did not pay on time, you and your family were eliminated. If she didn't want to pay you, you were assassinated. If she perceived that you had slighted her in any way, you were bumped off. Just one of the notable deaths included drug runner turned ATF informant Larry Nash, who was butchered to death with a chainsaw in a South Florida motel. This was a true crime event that actually inspired the iconic chainsaw scene in the 1983 film Scarface. So by late in 1983, Blanco's third husband, Dario Sepulveda, sick of the violence in Miami and supposedly in love with another woman, snagged their son, Michael Corleone, and returned home to Colombia with him. When she found out, La Madrina was so enraged that she hired hitmen back home who dressed up as policemen and gunned her husband down as her horrified child looked on. For Blanco, it was just another problem to be solved. But the assassination of Sepulveda was seen as many as going too far. And soon she found herself at war with his brother Paco, amongst others. So by 1984, Jaime, the nephew of her slain second husband, Alberto Bravo, was patrolling Miami waiting for his chance to kill her. And as I just mentioned, Paco, the brother of her third husband, was also looking for revenge. Despite her growing number of enemies, she escalated the violence even further when she had drug supplier Marta Ochoa tortured and killed. Blanco did not want to pay the $1.8 million she owed her new supplier, so she was murdered and Ochoa's body was found dumped in a canal. And this was crazy. She had just killed an Ochoa, a relative of the men whose family had helped found the Medellin drug cartel with Pablo Escobar. These are not the kind of people who forgive and forget. So not only were there lots of other drug dealers looking to kill her, but the DEA was also moving in on her. And by mid-1984, the heat was too much for Blanco in Miami, so she bounced to California. While there, she was able to lay low and avoid both hunting drug dealers and the DEA for a while. But by 1985, the DEA was finally able to move in on Blanco, and she was arrested at age 42. At the height of her power in the 80s, Griselda Blanco oversaw a billion-dollar organization that transported an estimated 3,400 pounds of cocaine into the United States per month that was distributed by over 1,500 dealers. But that was over now, as she was about to be sentenced to nearly 20 years in jail for narcotics trafficking. So that is the end of story, correct? Haha, not even close. The second shout out today is to another sponsor, Liquid IV, the electrolyte drink mix that you put into water that delivers hydration to your cells faster than just drinking water alone. This hydration and energy multiplier is way better than Gatorade. Make your water work harder. Give it a try. The link to order is in the description below. So Griselda Blanco begins a new chapter of her life in prison. And at the same time, Charles Cosby, an Oakland crack dealer who had been following the news of Blanco's arrest and imprisonment on TV, decided he would try to contact Blanco through a mutual acquaintance, a Panamanian woman named Manuela. So after the introduction was made, Cosby began to visit with Blanco, first by letter, then by phone, and finally, after 9 months or so, he began to visit her in person at the FCI Dublin, a federal women's prison in California. And it must have gone well because Cosby states that on the very first in-person visit, she agreed to give him 50 kilograms of cocaine to see if he could actually move it. He did, to the tune of $2 million. So the next month, he got 100 kilograms. He moved that, and from there, he was the man. As the two continued to visit, they became lovers, thanks to the help of paid-off prison staff, and Griselda Blanco, well, she was back in business. From there, Cosby detailed in an interview in 2008 in connection with the Cocaine Cowboys film that Blanco entrusted most of her remaining drug empire to him. And so Cosby peddled Blanco's cocaine for her from 1986 until about 1997. Cosby would report that her $1 billion-a-year empire had shrunk to $50 million a year, but she was still making bank for somebody behind walls. And, of course, the violence would continue. With La Madrina behind bars, her enemies turned their attention to her son, Osvaldo, who in 1992 was shot in the leg and the shoulder by one of Pablo Escobar's men, and he would later bleed to death in the hospital. Interestingly, as time drug on and Blanco neared her release date from federal prison, she would learn that the Miami-Dade District Attorney's Office wanted her convicted of first-degree murder in Florida, and they were talking death penalty as the punishment. Not good. And the biggest blow for Blanco came in 1994 when her trusted hitman Rivi became the star witness in the prosecution's case against her. This reportedly caused the godmother to have a nervous breakdown because Rivi obviously had enough dirt on her to send her to the electric chair many times over. In desperation, according to Charles Cosby, Blanco came up with a plan. He claimed that Blanco slipped him a note. On it was written the lowercase letters JFK, the number 5, MNY. Perplexed, Cosby asked Blanco what it meant. She said it meant that she wanted him to organize the kidnapping of John F. Kennedy Jr. in New York and to hold him in exchange for her freedom. They were to hold him hostage until she was released and delivered to Colombia, and the kidnappers would be receiving $5 million for their trouble. You want us to kidnap JFK Jr.? Well, that crazy. And as Cosby tells it, he didn't want anything to do with her harebrained scheme. And he told her so, which really triggered what would be the beginning of the end of their relationship. Now, Griselda, well, she moved forward with the plan without Cosby. And allegedly, the kidnappers came close to pulling it off. They managed to surround Kennedy while he was out walking his dog. But as the story goes, an NYPD squad car passed by and scared them off, so they abandoned the plan. So with the kidnapping plan having collapsed, time was running out for Blanco. If Rivi testified against her, she would certainly be put on death row. But remarkably, a phone sex scandal between Rivi and the secretaries from the Miami-Dade District Attorney's Office threw a major and bizarre wrench in the case. So with Rivi then discredited as an unbiased witness, the prosecutor's hands were tied, and they were forced to offer Blanco a plea deal, which only called for another 10 months in prison. Well, she took it, immediately, having narrowly escaped the death penalty. And after another 10 years behind bars, in 2004, La Madrina was released and deported back to Colombia at age 61. She would live out the next 8 years in Medellin. By then, the cartels of old were gone and dismantled, and she lived a quiet life. But she had just made too many enemies over the years to think that there would not be any consequences to her actions. In 2012, the 69-year-old Griselda Blanco would meet her own brutal end. Shot twice in the head inside a butcher shop in Medellin, Blanco was assassinated in a motorcycle drive-by shooting. The same murder method she'd pioneered years before. To this day, the killer of Blanco is still unknown. Quote, "It was some kind of poetic justice that she met the end that she delivered to so many others," said Bruce Bagley, author of the book Drug Trafficking in the Americas. Continuing the quote, "She might have retired to Colombia, but she had lingering enemies almost everywhere she looked. And what goes around comes around." A former homicide detective in the documentary Cocaine Cowboys would state that, quote, "Griselda was worse than any of the men that were involved in the drug trade," end quote. And according to former DEA agent Bob Palombo, who pursued Blanco for decades, the Black Widow was destined for a life of aberrant crime. His quote, "I don't think the fact that she was a female trying to prove something to the boys had anything to do with her violent behavior. I think it was just inherent in Griselda Blanco. This goes back to her life, the way she was brought up. She was just a violent person," end quote. Ultimately, Griselda Blanco has taken her place as one of the most ruthless drug lords in history. With a life filled with hundreds of ordered hits and a fairly lengthy trail of dead husbands. If you would like to learn more about the life and times of Griselda Blanco, there's a really good documentary that was released in 2006 called Cocaine Cowboys, and its sequel, Hustlin' with the Godmother, that was put out in 2008. More recently, Catherine Zeta-Jones played the Colombian drug kingpin in the Lifetime movie Cocaine Godmother, the Griselda Blanco story. So, Is she the most ruthless drug trafficker in history? Well, let me know in the comment sections below. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you did, hit that like button for me. If you haven't subscribed, do so now. That is all I have for you today. I'm Joshua Roberts, attorney at law, and you've been watching Lawyer Up.